Hello, I'm Darrell Gunter, your host for Leadership with Darrell W. Gunter, and I am so pleased to have a good new friend on the program, Ms. Sujin Jun, who's the co-founder for Patients for Patient Safety US. Sujin, welcome to the program, and thank you for coming on to share with us this great work that you're doing with your six other colleagues. But before we jump into that, could you share with our audience a little bit about your education background?
Yes, actually, there are 10 founders total for Patients for Patient Safety US. So I'm a pharmacist, but I define myself more as a patient safety activist than a pharmacist. We have 10 founders who have either experienced medical harm ourselves or through our loved ones. And we are very motivated, passionate patient safety activists working under the umbrella of World Health Organization. And we advocate for patients and caregivers in the area of healthcare policy. And we work with large organizations that are government, nonprofits, and we have champions from private sectors as well. So we work with various organizations that are committed to patient safety, and we follow as a guideline what's published as a Global Patient Safety Action Plan by World Health Organization. So that's what we do. And we want organizations in the United States to put patient safety as a priority. And patient safety is a broad term. So many things that are similar can get in the way and be prioritized. But the reason why where we are in healthcare right now is I believe at least, because patient safety hasn't been prioritized. So we strongly, fiercely speak up for patients and their patient rights, educate patients to speak up. That's what we do.
How do you go about, I mean, this is like a huge, huge communication effort on your part. How do you go about that to educate the various different stakeholders about patient safety?
So we have to adapt depending on who our audience is. But I guess what works almost always is a story. And people, I think it's an inherent human nature that people follow stories well, and it becomes an inspiration and gives motivation for change. So by sharing our stories, and believe me, it's not easy to share these stories. I almost always cry whenever I have to share mine. And it stirs something in their hearts. That's what I believe. And when that happens, people get motivated. And it doesn't matter where in the spectrum they are. It could be a leader in healthcare organizations, or it could be just a patient who was just admitted, or, you know, caregiver who had a difficult time and felt like they were not heard. So story, in my opinion, always works in inspiring and motivating people to change.
And who do you communicate this to, and what type of forum, you know, what type of megaphone do you have Because your organization has been around now for like a year and a half, correct?
Mm-hmm, yes. So I presented a webinar done by World Health Organization, mm-hmm. and they're the first patient safety day, World Patient Safety Day, mm-hmm. That was official by World Health Organization was September 17, 2020. So since then, World Health Organization has been focusing a lot on patient safety, and it's very apparent from the Global Patient Safety Action Plan that listening to patients are the most valuable solution. Okay. So, because we have the platform of World Health Organization, even many countries are very interested in the activities that we have in our country in the United States. And so that becomes a big platform globally. Mm-hmm. And governmental organizations like HHS, CMS, NAHQ, and IHI, they are all large, some are global, some are governmental, some are mm-hmm. large organizations that we work with, and we have been invited to share our stories. Mm-hmm. I did a leadership forum speech at IHI, Institute of Healthcare Improvement, mm-hmm. Where there were hospital executives and CEOs in the audience. And one of our founders, Susan Sheridan, mm-hmm. We directly report to World Health Organization. Right. And she is the contact person who does that. And she is the visionary of our organization. So
how long has the global organization been around? I mean, the World Health Organization, I know, has been around for a while, but when did they start the Patients for Patient Safety organization?
So when they made World Patient Safety Day in 2020, that's when that was the year they also published mm-hmm. Global Patient Safety Action Plan.
Okay.
So it's called Global Patient Safety Action Plan 2021 to 2030. Mm-hmm. So in 10 years, they're hoping to make big impact through patients' voices. And they intentionally include patients' stories every time they have webinars. So although we are very quite new, it's been only a year and a half, mm-hmm. And I'm probably the newbie among all the founders, but they have been advocating for decades. So they have many connections. And I was just so surprised when they were able to gather leaders from many organizations in no time. It was amazing to see. And, you know, these are very busy and have large responsibilities. Hard to get in touch with, and you know, so and as a newcomer in this area, it was very eye-opening to see that they already have these connections and able to gather people with really short turnaround time. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. And how did you, I guess you might have seen a webinar or a program from the World Health Organization to get involved, but what prompted you to leave your very promising career of a pharmacist to do this full time, and why?
Well, actually, this is not full time. This is my passion project. So I work full-time as a pharmacist.
Okay.
And I think I have alluded to that there is a story behind it. So yeah. I was a wedding videographer when my father was diagnosed with cancer, with stage 3 esophageal cancer. And because I did not have any healthcare background, I followed everything that was told by the doctor. And because my father was from a foreign country, South Korea, and had language and culture barriers, we had very difficult time navigating and understanding, and not to mention the gaps of access to care.
Yes.
So on top of that, like one of the medication he received was insulin, and he was on something called sliding scale insulin. And it's what that means, and I don't know if the listeners would understand that, so I'm going to explain what that means. So insulin, there are insulin doses that gets assigned for each meal, but there's something called sliding scale that patient or caregiver would measure the glucose of the patient. And if it's high or low, the doctor would give an order how much to give for that patient when the value is high or low. And what was not explained was because of the disease state that he was in, esophageal. So he had hard time drinking, eating. So he was often dehydrated, and the glucometer could give false reading when patients are dehydrated. And so although it'll say really high number, it may not necessarily be true. But I wasn't explained about that, and my father did not know about that either. And, you know, very few people know about this, actually. I learned this all in pharmacy school. So what would happen is I would give a high dose and he would crash because it wasn't true high. And he would lose consciousness, and we would go to ER. They would restore the glucose, and he would be discharged. And the same thing happened 2 weeks later. And our plea to see the doctor and you know, get answers from the doctor was dismissed as if it can happen to patients who are on insulin. And we were just so frustrated after the second admission. And we booked our flight to go to South Korea so he can get more affordable and comprehensive care. And he passed away 1 week before flight.
Oh, boy.
So, and I did not even know that was what happened. I, you know, chose pharmacy because I was frustrated with all the medications that I had to deal with. And I felt pharmacist was a bridge between patients and doctors. Although I had that motivation to change healthcare, all the pieces I connected, I wouldn't have known if I did not go to pharmacy school and learned about all this. So can you imagine like how many people would suffer this way and would not even know why their loved ones passed away or why some patients experience these things and may get dismissed? You know, so this really made my eyes open in a different way. And I started speaking up about my story because I felt there were patients and caregivers couldn't speak up for themselves because of language and cultural barriers like I had or my dad had. So I started sharing my story, and I started meeting these advocates who were perfectly well-spoken, perfectly well-educated, and still experienced medical harm. So after I...
And medical harm, very interesting phrase. Do you think that the medical harm is because the doctors are just, and the nurses are just overtaxed, too much to do and too many working hours? Is some of it professional neglect? Is some of it folks are just ignorant? They just don't know.
It can be part of that. I mean, there are various reasons why things happen the way things happen. It's case by case. It's all different. But I think one of the biggest problem is the system that we are in. You know, some people call it, there's really no design. It was not designed necessarily. It's just kind of industrialized, right? It's kind of like factory, right? You could go to hospital, you would go to nursing home, you know, like all these sections, but then in between there are important pieces that need to be communicated. So communication error is a big chunk in almost every patient safety event. But really, I think the biggest problem I feel is that there's really nobody following the patients throughout. And there can be caregivers, but if they're not well versed in healthcare, with this complexity we have in healthcare, it's guaranteed that the caregiver and the patient will get lost.
See, my mother, who has since passed, she passed in 2017, but she lived to be 93. So we were very blessed with that. My sister, Charmaine, was her caregiver. She actually gave up her career to take care of our mother. Mm-hmm. And I tell you, she had the book, the notes, and she was the advocate. And unfortunately, everyone doesn't have the opportunity to have that for them.
Right.
What are some of the best practices that you educate people about how to be an advocate for their loved one?
Well, doing the research, asking people good questions is very important. So being able to do that is the first advice that I would give to people. But there's, of course, misinformation on the internet, and there are influences of social media. You know, so there's a lot to navigate.
But what would be if someone who hears this, what would be a couple of good websites for them to go to educate themselves, to become more understanding of what you do at Patients for Patient Safety US, and what, you know, what are the things that they should make themselves aware of?
So there are, my go-to website that I would recommend would be, would be like CDC websites and many governmental websites that have information. You know, those will be my go-to recommendation. Okay. And of course, you know, not everything is standardized. Not everything is applies to that patient. So I know a lot of times, you know, the articles will say, talk to your doctor, you know, to make sure this is right for you. Right. But
your physician. Right.
But then, like, you know, I kind of find that advice to be, you kind of have to take that with the, in a mindful way, because not all people have great doctors with them. You know, of course, our insurance makes that a lot more complicated than it needs to be as our, you know, insurance changes, like in-network providers change like every year, right? And you have to make sure your insurance will, you know, have your provider in the network so you can, you will be paying less amount of money and, you know, all this complexity of not being able to have continuous care.
Mm-hmm.
Throws things out of spin for many patients.
Sure.
Yeah, so I usually recommend my friend's website. It's called gnanow.org.
Okay.
And his name is Brett Schwartz. So he made this website because he did not want anyone else to go through what he has gone through. He is an amputee, and he experienced medical harm, and that's why he had to get his legs and arms amputated. So
wow.
Yeah, and he's a lawyer. So and he was an insurance lawyer too. And when you're unconscious, it doesn't matter what your vocation is. You could be most educated person in healthcare and you could still experience medical harm. Wow. You know, he's not afraid to share about that. And he strongly believes advocates are the answers to many problems that he experienced. And, you know, he wanted to make a website that lists, that's like a directory of all advocates you can hire wherever you are. So there are blogs written by advocates, mm-hmm. those very advocates that will have like case scenarios and where patients need to be careful. So I recommend that website, you know, to look for an advocate if you need one.
And that website was gna.com.
GNA now.
Oh, GNA now.
Now.org.
.org.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for correcting it. GNANow.org.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what are your plans for this year? What is it that you would like to achieve with this very noble endeavor that you're undertaking?
So I'm hoping that we get more engagements with champions, and we are able to spread mm-hmm. our works and endeavors all over the country. So we always look for champions, and on our website at www.pfps.us, there is a link you can sign up to be a champion, and one of us will contact you and we can go from there. So recruiting champions and you know, more organizations like to who we strongly believe in co-producing, co-designing healthcare.
Okay.
And you know, having our voices
producing for our audience that's hearing this for the first time.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that? How do you define that?
So, you know, you will hear this buzzword called patient-centered healthcare.
Okay.
And that a lot of people want to pursue. And there's, it can mean a lot of different things. And we strongly believe healthcare needs to be redesigned with patients' voices in it.
Okay.
So co-producing, co-designing is considered, you know, having patients in board meeting, having patients in clinical trials, designing, having patients in hospital meetings. It can be a lot of different things, but without really having patients' voices, people are just guessing what's happening. And that's not a feedback. And feedback loop is very important in designing patient-centered healthcare.
Yes, yes. Could you give me that website one more time? It's pfps.us. Okay. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. So that is P as in Paul, F as in Frank, P as in Paul, S as in Sam, .us. Wow.
Yes.
Okay. Excellent. Excellent. And do you do any fundraising? Do you need financial support? How do you fund this operation?
So donations are being accepted, and we do get small fees when we have speaking engagements. Mm-hmm. But we are volunteer organizations. We don't necessarily get paid through our organizations necessarily. So we are building our nonprofit arm, mm-hmm. but mostly donation based.
And how would someone who wants to be an advocate become a part of your organization?
Yeah, so on our website there should be a link.
I see.
You can click.
I see.
Yeah.
I see
the yeah. That'll say join us. And yeah.
Beautiful. Beautiful. We're coming down near the close of our discussion. What other key points you want to communicate to this world community about patient safety?
So after I became a pharmacist and now I'm practicing as a clinician, patient safety is really twofold. One is, I'm kind of chunking it just for simplicity into two areas, right? One is the patient's side, right? And patient being able to speak up, but also in order for patients to be able to speak up, is what they need is psychological safety. Mm-hmm. And that applies to clinicians as well. So fostering psychological safety is so important, because when something happens, it's the human behavior that we want to make it look like nothing happened. Nobody saw it. So, it's easy to hide it. It's shameful, right? But if you have psychological safety guaranteed in the environment, that urge is less likely. And if you're not supported, like, why would you want to report it, right? Of course, there's integrity and there are caring professionals who want to do the right thing. But when no one is watching you, it's easy to do that. Mm-hmm. And it's very tempting as a human being. Mm-hmm. And we are all humans. We can all make mistakes. And in fact, patients and caregivers really want the truth. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day. And what makes them upset and make them sue, like hospitals, is when they're not told the truth.
Yes.
And it gets hidden,
mm-hmm.
Manipulated, lied to. So there are actually studies out there when patients are apologized up front and right measures are done, there's a less lawsuit and lower costs to remedy the situation. I know several advocates who have become advocates for the very system that hurt those patients because they were honest about it and they want to make the difference. So, which is, that's the story we want to hear, right? We don't, and you know, we work with our, like so many people who come to us mm-hmm. afraid to share the stories. And there's very slim chance for patients to win cases and you know, and it costs money. It, although there's psychological damage and, you know, monetary damage, there's so many things, right? Like happening when a patient safety event occurs, and we can all avoid that. And, you know, empathy and compassion is what I advocate for all the time because of that reason.
I think that's a good way to close out our discussion, empathy and compassion. Ladies and gentlemen, we are here with Ms. Sue Jinjun, co-founder for Patients for Patient Safety US. Thank you for coming on the program.
Thank you, Daryl.
That wraps it up this week on Leadership with Daryl W. Gunter. And we just want you to have a great day. But remember, leadership begins with you.